Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, new paradigms for a new world, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Thank you so much for joining us every Saturday, 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific time, and streaming live on the internet at richarddugan.com. And we often sort of do series of programs, and the series don't always run back to back. We usually kind of spot them throughout the weeks and months, and today is no exception, because we're going to revisit a subject that is, I'm not exactly sure why I would say it's near and dear to my heart, but for some reason I have a curiosity in this particular area, and it's one of the reasons why I've asked our guest to return to our program, because she has a new book and she has some new insights and so forth. And so we're going to talk with our guest, who is Mary Ann Dancing Heart, who is the author of her earlier work, The Last Adventure of Life. She's a transformational healer. She's an end-of-life and grief coach, has served as a hospice counselor for many years, and is passionate about bringing the subject of death back to life. She also delights in learning about and sharing the integrative ancient modalities of healing. And, of course, her website, changewithcourage.com. You can go there and check out other things. She has a new book out, and it's a rather intriguing title, The Most Important Day of Your Life. Are you ready? And we're going to talk about that. Maria, welcome to our program. It's great to have you back again.
Thank you, Richard. It's great to be back.
Now, you obviously have been writing, because one of the reasons you're back on the program today is to talk about your latest work, the Greatest Day of Your Life, and we're going to talk more about that, The Most Important Day. It's not actually the greatest, but it's the most important day of your life. And
it could be your greatest.
I suppose it could.
It could, definitely.
I'll give you a little backstory so that we can kind of move forward in our program today. I have had a couple of interesting and unusual experiences in the last few months. On a sort of a sad note, you know, we lost one of our animals a couple of months ago. But we had the opportunity to lay with him in literally those final moments and seconds before he transitioned. Now, this was a cat. A member of our family. We have no children, so these are our children.
Right.
And we knew what was happening. We'd actually taken him to the vet, and the vet basically examined him and said, you know, we could run lots of expensive tests, but odds are before the results came back, he'd pass. So we made him comfortable.
Good for your vet.
Yeah.
I appreciate vets and doctors who talk straight with people that way.
But I don't, and I'll continue the story, but I would take it that as far as the medical community is concerned, that doesn't happen quite as often as it does with, say, the animal world or the veterinary world.
Right, right. I think that's very true.
And we aren't talking here about necessarily about euthanasia, although at the same time, there are those who they've grown weary. They're tired of fighting and struggling through whatever it is that they're going through. And it's like, I just want to move on. And they're terminal. There is, in essence, if you will, there's no hope for them in this life at this particular point. It's all but over. And yet the medical profession, I guess it's sort of doesn't know when to say no.
Right. They don't know when to. They feel like it's giving up, I think. So they, rather than admit that it's time to let go, they keep fighting.
Yeah.
Keep trying to fix it when there's no fixing anymore.
Yeah. It's like this isn't the last stop. There are more places to go. And
exactly. Life goes on and on and on and on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and there are much better places than this. than that time, you know?
Well, some would say the way things are now, you're absolutely right.
In fact, I've just discovered a book on this by a Dr. Robert Martinson, who's written a book called A Life Worth Living, A Doctor's Reflections on Illness in a High-Tech Era. And I haven't actually read it yet, but I've read the reviews, and this sounds like a doctor who's finally openly speaking about the reality that a lot of times at the end in hospitals, things don't go so well because the doctors are using all these high-tech things that are, you know, keeping people alive when it's time to release them.
We do tend to hold on, and I wonder sometimes if we need to sort of unlearn the level of attachment that we have created. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that we don't care. I think that's probably the biggest stumbling block that we have, is that that's then interpreted as, oh, then you don't care about this person.
Right, right.
When
or
in fact, I care so much that...
You just want to give up when you should keep fighting. You know, you should keep making this person stay alive.
And I applaud, for example, Farrah Fawcett's battle, and especially in filming it. But mm-hmm. I had to ask myself at one point, where are you going? Where are you going with this?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess in a situation like that, I guess I would start asking myself, God, I hope I achieved everything that I wanted to, because this is about it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not to say that there aren't miraculous healings that happen for some folks, mm-hmm. but that right now that isn't the norm.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
We're going to continue talking more about this, also about your new book, The Most Important Day of Your Life. Are you ready? I want to talk to you about a specific instance that happened here. This is beyond the cat story that I was sharing, which again was quite profound. I had never been around a creature, man or beast, if you will, who was transitioning. And so it was quite extraordinary for me and for my wife, who felt as though the cat's essence literally passed right through her. So it was quite a profound experience. We're going to continue talking with Maria Dancing Heart here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I ask you to stay right where you are. Tell me your story. New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. My guest today is Maria Dancing Heart. Her latest book is The Most Important Day of Your Life. Are you ready? And Maria, I have to share with you also a situation, and we can sort of build on this in the program. A gentleman that my wife and I have known for the last 4 years since we've lived in Santa Barbara was diagnosed a year ago with pancreatic cancer. And of course, there you have, basically you have, I don't even know if I want to call it a death sentence. It's a ticket to transition, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Because very few, if any, stay in this life with pancreatic cancer for any length of time. Mm. Well, this gentleman was no different. And his family began to rally around him in terms of not so much fighting to keep him alive, but assisting him in bringing closure to a lot of the things that were still open, healing old wounds, making amends, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he even made amends with us.
Mm.
We had had a little disagreement about a year and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
And during this year period, we went to visit him, and he just apologized profusely. He just wanted to basically clear the air. Of course, he wasn't making the statements and then saying, because I'm dying and I want to make sure everything is squared away before I leave.
Mm-hmm.
He was just doing it. It didn't, you know, and his reasons or his motives are his motives.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember his son sharing with me after his transition how proud he spoke of his father and the great work, as he put it, that his father did in that process. And they gave other descriptions. But where we live before, and we could sense there was a tangible feeling in the air of before and after.
Right.
That where we were living, it was much lighter. And so it was a very, now we weren't with him, but his children were. And they have described to us the process, the day before his passing, he was up singing with the children and talking and telling stories. And and then apparently at one time the next morning he woke up and he said, "I've got to go." And they thought, "Oh, well, we'll get you up and we'll take you into the bathroom." He said, no, "I've got to go." And then I guess it was the process of, okay, so how do I do this? I'm ready. Now, how do I do this? And of course, you know, he had the family and friends around him, his children, who are knowledgeable as you. So let's talk a little bit about that process. Obviously, we can only experience it from this side in terms of family and friends who are passing. And one day we will be the one going through that process. And that's a tough one to describe because we haven't been through that. But in terms of your work as a hospice caregiver and a transformational healer and so forth, can you describe a little bit about what is going on in those kinds of situations?
Well, I like to talk about it as a time when we have one foot in one world and another foot in the other world. And I've never been there per se, so I can't literally describe it, but I can imagine that the person is beginning to get glimpses of more specifically what it's like on the other side, or sometimes there are literally spirits and beings they recognize who are beckoning them and, you know, giving them the green light, so to speak, that it's time to get ready. And for instance, your friend who says, you know, it's time to go, or, you know, some might refer to it's, I need to go home now. It's time, you know, home-going time. Or I think of the woman who, I was not present to witness this, but I heard she was a very loving spiritual gal, not particularly religious, but just before she died, she had been very quiet, you know, like comatose with one foot in the other realm, no doubt. But she sat up suddenly in bed and said out loud, "I see hundreds of angels," and then lay back down and took her last breath, I heard. So, you know, people can witness some of the most amazing things, and sometimes they'll share, and sometimes they won't. You know, I've heard of situations where the person will hold out their arm, and it's as if they're seeing something very clearly and, you know, wanting to move toward it or grab it or, you know, reach for it. There's this sense of, wow, you know, something awesome is there. And they will open their eyes and look at something, stare at something, kind of like my cat does sometimes. You know, my cat is often looking up around me, and I'm often wondering, what in the world does she see? You know, does she see my high self or my guides and angels? Does she see light? What is she looking at? But clearly, the heavens open up, or the veil opens in those few hours and days before a person dies, and they're privy to things that those of us who are more grounded on the earth are not privy to.
I know that when I have heard of certain individuals who are beginning that process to transition, and even when they have, there is a certain sense of envy on my part for their experience. I wonder what it is that they're doing now. What's going on in their world? What are they seeing, hearing, tasting, smelling? It's not an envy to the extent that I'm at this point ready to take the plunge. you know, I guess I still I'm a little too attached to this world, which there's nothing wrong with. But I often wonder, and as you say, these folks will have a glimpse when they have one foot in that world and one foot in this world for a short period of time before they decide, I'm going to put both feet in the other world, and off they go.
Yep, yep.
How did you get started in all of this? Because for most people, this is not a fun thing to deal with, to face on a day-in and day-out basis. I can only imagine what it must be like to be a hospice caregiver, mm-hmm. and to be around people who are more terminal than the rest of us, because they know that they have a very short time, whereas the rest of us, we believe that we're going to be here for years and years and years and years and years.
Right.
How did you get started?
For me, it was outgrowing the ministry I was in. I was doing church work. I was a parish minister for 10 years, and something in me was chomping at the bit, or you could say something in me was dying or losing joy, and I was seeking something with more variety, more passion, more something in it for me. And ironically, the word hospice literally came to me one day in a meditation when I knew that the parish ministry was ending for me, but I knew somehow that ministry wasn't ending. It was just going to take another turn or another aspect to it. And so I paid attention to that word hospice. My mother happened to have died a few years before that. And although she didn't die on hospice, she was able to die at home. She had indicated that she wanted a home death, and she was one of these people who was not afraid to talk about death and to be more proactive. So I remember even going to the funeral home with her before she died, you know, on one of my visits home. And so she had been very clear about wanting to be at home. So we were able, my sisters and I and my dad were able to put together an impromptu hospice thanks to nurses who were in their church and a doctor who was willing to make home visits and things like that. And so she ended up dying in her living room back in Pennsylvania. And we had a pretty amazing time right around her death. So in hindsight, I see how that was part of my preparation for doing hospice work. You know how that goes, where at the time you don't realize, but later in hindsight you start putting the pieces of the puzzle together, and then you go, oh, wow, that's why this happened then, and that's how I was given the gift of that experience of my mother's death. And to this day, I feel very strongly that had I not experienced that time of my own mother's death at home, I would not be as fit, or, you know, I would not be as good a hospice worker as I am, because so much is based on your experience. It's not book learning. Hospice is not about book learning so much as doing the work and having the experience and wisdom of life.
Mm-hmm.
So having been through that with my mother, and not to mention all the experience I had had as a minister, certainly gave me lots of grist for the mill and gave me a comfort level with the work that I was learning how to do on hospice. However, I might venture to say also that if you believe in past lives, which I do, I was likely a caregiver at the end of life. You know, I may have been a nun or a spiritual figure of some kind who helped people at the end of life, probably in a previous lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
So this comes on some level rather naturally for me, or, you know, I've been given the gifts and the responsibility, if you will, to do this work.
Yeah.
one could say.
It's extraordinary work, to say the very least. And I know, too, that as times change, we see more opportunities for people to go into this field, if you will.
Yeah.
It is becoming, sort. I don't want to say an industry, but it is becoming a field,
mm-hmm.
an opportunity for people to learn about it and to be involved in it and to assist others going through it, those who are going through it and those who are staying here
right.
who can learn how to help their loved ones go through it.
Right.
And it is most extraordinary. And it is, why do you say that it is the most important day of our lives?
This comes out of the more Buddhist perspective, in that as you study and read Tibetan Buddhism, for instance, you learn that in their thought, the day we die is the most important day of our life, and the moment we die is very critical, in that the higher vibration you can hold when you die, then the higher vibration you go to, and you can release karma. And there's a lot of possibility in that moment of death. So, you know, say even if you've lived a miserable life, perhaps, if you can come to terms with that and turn your perspective around, even as you're dying. And I suppose this is Christian too, you know, that people who can make big leaps at the end in terms of forgiveness and belief system and all of it can really make that big leap when they are dying, or even as they're dying. And then just recently I came across a fascinating little paragraph written by François Mitterrand, of all people,
mm-hmm.
the French prime minister, you know, a while back. And this is from a book called Intimate Death by Marie de Hanazel, who worked in I believe she was a psychologist-type person who worked in a hospital where many were dying. But in the foreword to that book, François Mitterrand says that at the moment of utter solitude, when the body breaks down on the edge of infinity, a separate time begins to run that cannot be measured in any normal way. In the course of several days, sometimes, with the help of another presence that allows despair and pain to declare themselves, the dying seize hold of their lives, take possession of them, unlock their truth. They discover the freedom of being true to themselves. It is as if at the very culmination, everything managed to come free of the jumble of inner pains and illusions that prevent us from belonging to ourselves. The mystery of existence and death is not solved, but it is fully experienced. That is perhaps the most beautiful lesson of this book. Death can cause a human being to become what he or she was called to become. It can be, in the fullest sense of the word, an accomplishment.
So there truly can be a sort of an ending to mm-hmm. this life in a more concrete way, rather than just it ending. You put the end on the life in that context. So it's like the completion of a movie.
Right. And you can really come into your own. You know, you can make a turnaround sometimes and really punctuate your own life at that moment. So I guess one could say the potential at the end of life is tremendous. The potential for healing and growth. I mean, you talked about it with your friend there too earlier.
Mm-hmm.
It's like so much is open for taking big quantum leaps at that particular time. And if people can utilize that, and better yet, be prepared for it, you know, then you don't even have to make a turnaround. Then you're all ready and you can just jump when the time comes.
Exactly. You're listening to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. My guest is Maria Dancing Heart. Her latest work is The Most Important Day of Your Life. Are you ready? And her website is linked at richarddugan.com. All you have to do is go there. Although I'm going to go ahead and give you that website as well, because we want you to check out the information if it'll be helpful for you. ChangeWithCourage.com. ChangeWithCourage.com. That is the website. She has also written The Last Adventure of Life, and we encourage you to check out all of her materials in that regard. I think it would be beneficial for you, especially if you know of someone who is in the process of transitioning, or maybe you are in that process. You know that it's time. I have to say that I'm working on setting up an interview with a gentleman that I met here in Santa Barbara, and I'm waiting for him to, you know, process the invitation, because I would like to get his impressions now, knowing what he knows, and very respectfully interview him in this regard. He's an extraordinary gentleman. He expresses himself now more so through art, but you know, he can certainly converse. And so I'm looking forward to that opportunity. If it doesn't come, I certainly understand that and will respect his decision. But I'm finding that if we are able to talk more about it, and I know you feel the same way, Maria, and if we're able to talk more about this, we can dispel the myths and the mystery and the fear over this process.
Yeah, especially the fear.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wish and I hope for our country and our world's sake that we can really let go of fear around the dying piece, because there is no need for it at all. There's a need if you've lived an awful life. But even then, you know, you can still make a turnaround.
So yeah.
Don't let the fear get better of you.
Let me ask you, the second part of the title is, are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
First of all, how does one get ready? And then how does one know that they are ready?
Well, I would say that the way to get ready is to go deeper spiritually. And one would find, I believe, if you read my book, that it is a book that helps take you into the deeper realms. In each chapter, or after each chapter, I have a spiritual exercise that I offer so people might do something or try something they haven't tried before in the spiritual arena. Because my sense of it is that one of the reasons we are so afraid of death or awkward around it in our culture is because we've neglected the spiritual side of ourselves. So to really, I'm not talking about religion. I'm talking really about whatever floats your spiritual boat, and that may not be religion at all. You know, it may be your artwork, or it may be some other hobby or something in your more right brain, mystical side that you're passionate about. Most people have something, you know, in that area. And then, you know, in terms of are you ready, am I ready, I think a good clue for that would be a claim that the Celtic people make. They say you want to die before you die so that when you die, you know you're not dying.
Is okay.
There a way, you know, if you're still afraid about your death and you're still on some level shoving it under the rug because you don't want to deal with it, you're probably not ready. But if you're at home with death and on some level, you know, if you were told you're going to die today or in the next week or two, that doesn't faze you, that you're at home, you're comfortable with, well, when my time comes, it comes, you know. When you have that kind of attitude about death, then that's probably when you're ready.
Hmm. It would be maybe the equivalent also of planning and getting ready to go on a trip. and viewing it the same as if you were going to die. I mean, and having that same attitude, oh, I'm just going on a trip.
Precisely. Yeah. And I love the little quote that was found on the National Hospice NHPCO website. It says, "Funny how you'll plan every aspect of every trip, except the most important one you'll ever take."
Isn't that interesting?
You know, and isn't it true in our culture that we love to make trips, you know? We're always planning a trip or a vacation or holiday.
But I don't know what to pack. And I'm not sure if they'll allow a carry-on or if I have to check my bags. Or if I'll have any bags at all. As a matter of fact, rather interestingly, my wife and I just took a trip. It was a day trip, but back to Phoenix. And each of us had a carry-on each. I mean, we were traveling, obviously, extremely light. And so I'm sitting here thinking, well, you're going to travel a heck of a lot lighter than that when you take that final trip from this world to the next.
Tell me
a little bit about your impressions of entertainment's view of death and dying, and especially those that are trying to do it in a realistic and or a respectful way, in terms of the people who get stuck, who haven't crossed over, as the term is. In other words, they've died, but they haven't, quote-unquote, crossed over into the light or whatever other, you know, terms or conditions that may be in other traditions. Or is it just, when I leave this body, I am where I am supposed to be in the next step?
So you mean, like, the ones they're referring to in Ghost Whisperer?
Yeah.
Those shows.
Those kinds of things. Yeah. I mean, again, we can't, I know you can't really speak from experience because, well, you haven't died. But in terms of their portrayal of these people and the family and friends of people that you have known whose relatives have transitioned, who have died, are you aware of any kinds of experiences like that?
I am, and I've actually had people pose those questions to me, too. Like, I'm recalling a daughter of a woman who died, but her death came quite quickly, and the daughter's sense after the woman died was she was wondering if her mom actually knew that she had died and whether she had been able to go to the light. And I believe it is often or sometimes possible, and I hear of this, you know, not infrequently, that spirits do get stuck and in limbo, if you will, when a death, especially when a death happens suddenly or when a person is of the, is maybe deeply in denial that they could even possibly die, such that when they are actually dead, they may not recognize that they are, which seems odd, but it's possible, I guess. Or there's a clinging that happens to the earth, you know, this attachment to life.
Right.
Such that the letting go is not possible. And I think the depiction in shows like Ghost Whisperer, say, and I happen to be pretty aware of that one because I've watched it at times, that those depictions are not uncommon. I mean, I remember meeting a Japanese psychopomp of sorts. This is what they call the people who help spirits that get stuck in the earth, you know, disengage.
Mm-hmm.
And she came to visit me once in the North Seattle area, and I remember I waited and waited for her because she was supposed to come at, like, you know, 7 or 8 in the evening, sort of an after-dinner time. And it was after midnight when she finally arrived. And my daughter was sound asleep, I remember, and I'd been waiting and waiting. And she made the comment, "Gosh, there are a lot of people in this area or a lot of spirits that haven't moved on yet. I was real busy on my way up here." So apparently she had taken the time because there were all these spirits that needed to be moved out or cleared out and moved on to the light. she had made it her business to help these spirits move on because it was pretty congested in my neighborhood, I guess.
Well, now, does this then fall under the category, what we're talking about, of the paranormal?
I guess, yeah. Yeah, it's that mystical realm that a few are privy to see and experience, but most of the masses, you know, don't see or know or understand this. They may hear about things, or they may even live in a house that's haunted. You know, these things happen too, where things are slamming in the house, or beds are being rocked, or, you know, the oddest things can happen in a home where a spirit is remaining and not very happy.
I know that with this friend that I've shared a little bit about, his family, because he had gone through, he was in the hospice system, if you will,
mm-hmm.
Because they knew the cause of death, he was actually able to pass in his bedroom with his family around him.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had his body, as the son had shared with me, lying, as he phrased it, lying in state.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the more physical aspects of it were that he had to make sure that there was plenty of dry ice to keep the body cool, and so forth. But it was only going to be for like maybe 2 days, maybe 3 days tops. And then there would be the next step, of course, as far as the remains.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought that was so intriguing. But I remember looking into his face afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
And he looked so much younger. It was like all of the stress and the struggle and the strife had just left him.
Yep.
And he had a smile on his face.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This is very typical, I believe, that there's a tremendous peace that comes over people even as they're passing.
Yeah. It is an extraordinary vocation that you have chosen, or did you choose it?
Yeah, or is it a calling? Did it just kind of, in a sense, come to me?
I mean, you were already in the ministry.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. And I was already on some level being taught to embrace different modes of faith. You know, I had grown up in Japan. My parents may have been missionaries, but I had been invited to look at other religions, you know, like Buddhism and Shintoism, and I was I've always been fascinated by the Native American tradition, which is not unlike the Japanese Shinto way. And so it was like I was already interested in all these different faiths and how they might come together, because I've always also had a heart for peace and yearning for bringing the world together. I mean, I didn't like the fact that my country had attacked Japan or Japan had attacked America, and there had been this great divide, you know, through World War II that happened before I was born, but nevertheless, it was the aftermath that I had to listen to and hear about and live with somehow, and always desiring to bring the bridge back between the cultures.
Hmm.
And fortunately, there is a bridge there, you know, and we're mending old rifts, not just between Japan and America, but between many countries right now in many parts of the world.
Wow. Well, if you have just joined us, I'm Richard Dugan, and my guest is Maria Dancing Heart, and she has written her latest work, which is The Most Important Day of Your Life, Are You Ready? And she's also written The Last Adventure of Life. I've often heard it said, Maria, that we should live each day as if it were our last,
mm-hmm.
and yet it's kind of a hard one to do, because we aren't thinking in those terms, even if we try to do it in a pseudo way.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't seem to have quite the same impact.
What do you mean?
How do we, well, we don't know. I mean, we don't know that, you know, we're going to cross the street and get hit by a truck and that's it. Mm. We assume that we're going to continue on after today and after tomorrow and after the next day.
Right.
And yet, you know, we're told you should live each day as if it's your last. Is there any suggestion you can give for someone to maybe kind of get into that mindset so that each day has the kind of meaning for them that maybe when it comes time to enter that most important day, that there isn't quite the volume of work that needs to be done, if you will.
Right, right. Well, it does feel like more than ever, you know, because of the state of the world today, too, it's time to let go of everything that's no longer serving you. And I don't just mean physical things, but especially those non-physical things, you know, those beliefs and those grudges and resentments and judgments that we hold against others. It is time to release those in a big, big way. And I have tools for that. I've even developed, or I've learned about and am developing in my own practice something called the heart wall healing that literally helps people release old negative emotions from their heart wall or from their auric field, if you will.
Yeah.
And then just in the last month or last few weeks, I've discovered an awesome healing instrument. It's a little pen-like device. I call it my magic pen or my magic wand that vibrates at the zero-point frequency.
Oh, yes.
And this is quantum physics at its best.
Hmm.
But when I met this tool, when I met this healing device, I jumped up and down for joy because I thought, my gosh, we really are going to change the world with this healing device, because as we come into center, you know, and come into who we really are and can release all the other garbage, and that's what the zero point frequency can help us do, then we heal it all. You know, then we can truly be in the present moment.
And we can find out about this magic wand at your website?
Yeah, you can go to my links and healing tools under tools for healing. I think I have it's the first one. It's the Amiga link. Amiga or Omega is, they wanted to build a mega company.
Oh.
Company out of Singapore. And interestingly enough, the scientists who developed this were not American scientists. They were German, Japanese, and Russian. And they have put together a phenomenal little tool. And it's not just this wand. They have a pendant you can wear that puts the bubble around you of the zero-point frequency. And there's a bracelet that will allow your circulation to multiply, I think, by 3 times, but keep your heart from being stressed. And then there are some DNA and sea salt brine kinds of dietary supplements that they offer as well. It's a pretty phenomenal company that just landed in the States and Canada early this year.
And the website is changewithcourage.com.
Correct.
And people can get more information, and we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan. Don't go away.
If we leave here today, we could be 1,000 miles away. Take to that road, see how far it goes, and on that great ocean. All the trouble that you know empties out as you go.
Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and I thank you so much for joining us on the program, as well as my guest, Maria Dancing Heart. And we're fast approaching the end of our program, Maria. So in the last few moments that we have, I put to you the question that I usually do give to my guests at the end of the program. You certainly have done many, many things in your life, and you've come a long way. Why this? Why now?
I believe that as we move through this new consciousness, creating a new consciousness on the planet, we are needing to die to the old and welcome in the new. So the work that I'm doing is not only to help people who are literally dying today on the planet, but to help us all, in a sense, recognize that we are dying, and the old ways are dying, and it would be in our highest and best interest to learn to let go and to learn to die so that we're not stuck and getting in our own ways to move into the new paradigm. Mm-hmm. So there's sort of a parallel reality that I'm talking about and want to share with people above and beyond the death and dying, the more physical, tangible death and dying work that I do.
Right.
And that many do. I'm so grateful to all the people on the planet today who do this sacred work. You know, it's a birthing kind of work, and it's a deathing kind of work, and it all connects. It's all interrelated, and when we really get this, it's so magical,
yeah.
And life becomes magical, and I write some more about that in my book. And by the way, it's coming out. It's not quite out yet. I'm doing the finishing touches even as we speak here. This is my weekend to go pick up the manuscript that's in the last form that I have one more read of it, and then it will go to print. And I was told today, May 22nd, looks like the day that it will actually be out, and you can order it online, or you can simply give me a call, and we'll work it out to get you some copies.
Great. Great. Well, Maria, thank you so much for sharing your time and your story with us again today. And it's great to have you back on the program. And we look forward to talking with you again very soon, and much success with the new book.
Thank you, Richard. And it was a pleasure and honor to talk with you again, too.
Absolutely. We look forward to doing it again. And we managed to squeeze this interview into that short period of time as you're preparing for this new book to come out on the 22nd of May. You can go to changewithcourage.com and get more information. Also, richarddugan.com. You'll be able to hear this interview in the archives page. Until next Saturday at 3 p.m. Pacific Time, I'm Richard Dugan, and I thank you very much for joining us here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Love to Lal.